Everybody, welcome to another Canine Mind Freak podcast. Thank you for joining us. And today I am interviewing David Dorn with the Canine FTO program, canineFTO.com. That's K, the number 9, F as in Frank, T as in Tom, O as in Oscar, and that stands for Canine Field Training Officer. Now, recently, if you guys have been following our podcast and our videos, David and I have actually partnered up, and I'm going to be writing a canine psychology section for the Canine FTO program. So I had the pleasure of meeting David here not too long ago. He caught one of our videos. I did a really awesome interview with him about Lisa Litt research about handler beliefs affecting scent detection dog outcomes, and that led into a great conversation on double blinds and some of the flaws within a double blind. So David gave us some great information on that. Just to give you a little bit of background, David is an 18-year law enforcement veteran, and he has 22 years of canine experience, not only as a handler himself, but also as a trainer. So we partnered up because David and I see eye to eye on a lot of different areas. And one of those areas is this. David and I know that it's really hard to get access to the education that you got in your canine academy on the fly. Like, you know, I think a lot of guys, they come out of the academy and there's just a lot of question because now you don't have your trainer or a mentor with you. You're on your own. And most guys kind of freak out a little bit. And it would be nice that, you know, if you have a few minutes just to be able to sit down and go over a couple things, right? And not to mention that protocol for departments is always changing and evolving as society always changes and evolves. So that's why for me and Canines on Duty, and I know Dawn's backing this too, is that Canine FTO provides you with a lot of information. I'm not going to get into that just yet because we want to hear from David. David, thank you so much for joining us here. Appreciate you having another conversation with me.
Yeah, this is awesome.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Tell us why, to start, let's start here. Why did you have the desire to create Canine FTO?
Well, the goal of the Canine FTO programming is to bridge the gap between the academic training and the real street deployment and add consistency to the training to one of the most important parts of the canine team, the handler. So with Canine FTO, we quickly realized by speaking at 4 of the 5 major conferences since 2008, I've had the opportunity to go there and speak. So I'm speaking on canine unit supervision or problem solving, but I'm sitting in classes or speaking at the conference. And let's just say for the supervisor course or for problem solving, a lot of the stuff was coming up that people were going to academy classes that used to be 340 hours long. And now they're in a canine school that's 3 weeks. So you're down to 120 hours from 300 or 480. Mm-hmm. Some schools are 960. So I went to 3 different handler schools. They were all 480 hours, all 3 of those. Then when I went to a trainer school, you're looking at another, you know, 480 or above, depending on what the specific topic was. So if it was detection, that was 5 weeks. If it was patrol, that was 8 more weeks on top of 5 years of experience, you know, to meet some kind of criteria to be a trainer. You didn't just come out with some quickie McDonaldization stuff. Like now, people just want the information faster. They're quicker, we're smarter. We learned, me and you, people like us, instructors have learned how to gear it toward specific people and tasks that they're doing. And then I can only relate to one thing, you know, canine psychology, boom, or canine FTO, I'm dealing with people that we created that class for were instructors. So we did that to bridge the gap. So if a police officer goes to the academy, he goes to the academy, and then when he graduates from a regular police academy, he's put on FTO. That's field training. So it didn't matter where he went to the academy, it had to be improved. But when he went to work the first day, the first shift, he was in the car with somebody. Now, those classes are usually, that could go on for 3 months, and sometimes departments are longer. So you go through day one, and it just goes through there. Day one is policy and procedures, equipment, how to get in and out of patrol car, where the locker rooms are, where you're taking your breaks, here's where the lunchroom is, just like starting a new job. Mm-hmm. It's just like that. How do you vehicle patrol? How do you answer the radio? Here's what the radios are. I mean, that policy and procedure manual is that thick, the FTO manual. So if we are doing that with somebody in law enforcement, he's not expected because he or she's not expected because they went to the academy to be able to take the tasks of a police officer for that particular agency.
Right, right.
And same with SWAT. So you went to SWAT school. I mean, you went to the, just like getting in a canine, and then you have to practice that stuff. You have to maintain it. But there's a whole another SWAT operations manual that's not in the policy. The
right.
agency's policy says you will maintain a SWAT unit. It's probably 9 pages long. But the operations manual for SWAT is going to be 500 pages long.
Right.
And it's going to be broken down to different things based on different weapons, based on stuff that other people don't even see, tactics, everything, deployments, what that means, how do you deploy, what team are you on, how many teams do you have. So these things get all broken down. It's not just as easy, and we ran into this, it's not just as easy as going out and getting a dog and then you're starting your own business, or you're going out and getting a dog and now your department has a canine unit. And if you had a canine unit in the past, like we said, those people went to school for 3 months, and now you're going to school for 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So it literally bridges the gap between what happened originally. We created it for the canine field training officer. That's where the name is, canine FTO. We created it for the canine FTO. So you're at your agency, you have several different teams, or you're the only team. You have a certain amount of years of experience. Once you guys are blessed to have another canine team come on, that person went to the school. We don't care where they went to school. When they get home, back to your agency, you're the FTO.
Yep.
So you're going to run them through our 21 chapter curriculum. When they get back from school, and it starts just like a regular FTO program. That's where
awesome.
We originally created FTO, was for that. And we quickly learned, so people were going to that class, guys were coming back from, I don't care where they went to school. It kind of opened it up where people could go to school because they knew when they would get back, the canine FTO would catch them day one and teach them exactly what they needed to know. And
sure.
that's 21 chapters of everything. So we originally created it for that, to bridge the gap between academic and what happens at your agency. We're not telling you what to do at your agency. The chapters are there. You're going to tell them based on your policy and procedure, based on all your operations, on how it runs at your agency. But it's just
right.
a format, a curriculum to follow. It bridges that gap. Well, we quickly learned after that there was other things. So I was teaching canine unit supervision, and you get to have 100 people at the conference, you know, so I have 100 people in the room, and you're like, okay, 100 supervisors in here. How many have been a canine? So you get everybody to stand up. How many have been a canine? It's like 5 to 10 out of 100. Have been in canine, and now you're supervising something you have known nothing about. That quickly just shoots an arrow at our whole programming. Most of the things, our whole industry as a whole, has those problems occurred with a supervisor telling you to do something that they don't know how to do.
Right.
Nowhere in law enforcement does a supervisor tell you what to do or supervise something they don't know, except for canine. Think about that. Taser, everything. They know how to run everything. They know how to run baton. They know how to run the vehicles. They know how to where the vehicle go. I mean, there's tons of stuff that the supervisor needs to know on the back end, but he also already had the street experience to tell you and mentor you and supervise you in any aspect of canine or any aspect of law enforcement except canine.
Right.
So 90% of the class out of 100 never been in canine before, and they're expected to know what to do with us. And the first call that they go to could be the call where the canine is.
Right.
Somebody pretty bad, or do we use a canine? Do we not use a canine? And then the rules came out where you, where the supervisor shouldn't be telling the handler when to use his dog. He can tell him when not to use the dog, but these people don't understand that. So we created canine supervisor course. After that, it's 15 chapters instead of 21. There's certain things that they didn't need to know as a handler, but they need to know them as a supervisor, because whatever is going to happen in canine is about to happen. It could be your first call. Just like my first call in law enforcement, I was already drawing my gun, already circling a car, already doing a takedown. If you didn't have a canine FT, if you didn't have an FTO on the car, you would be even more freaked out. But that is the first call. If I wasn't trained on my weapon already, how to do that, and confident to do that, boy, it would get a little shaky. And that is call one. So in canine, the first call you go to is going to be that. So we created canine FTO to bridge that gap. But a lot of agencies we ran into, especially after 9/11, were starting canine units and you're the first handler.
Right.
So being the first handler, we also created, then we had to create the canine handler school. So we have canine handler as well. So we have canine FTO for the private sector. There's 10,000 bomb teams or more out there, or detection dog teams, including bed bugs.
Right.
Including accelerant, including anything that they're out there spelling. Those people didn't even go to school. They just mail ordered, you know, because of the way the industry is now, they mail order a canine, you know, it flies in from Alabama to California, say, and now I have a dog here. That person didn't even go to school. So that can hurt our industry. Usually it's safety across the board if they don't know the education behind what they're doing, you know, and they are professional. Right. So that's why we created the civilian private professional side as well, so those people could get educated, because it's one, their first call, they're going to be running into stuff. And we have other classes coming up, you know, the canine psychology course with you, and then there's other stuff that we're going to try to do out in the field, but right now it's hard to get out there and do those classes in the field, so we need to start doing more online to keep people's continued education running. You just can't go stagnant because you're not running.
Well, and two, I think one of the biggest problems, at least this is what I noticed when I was running my kennels and I had my police canine academies, is, you know, they go for 3 to 4 weeks, and it's like the first class on day one, like 80% of that information gets forgotten. And because they had their little manual that I had, because I really wasn't online like we are now. And, you know, those manuals get lost. They get thrown in the trunk of the car with everything else, all the other gear that they have, and is never to be found again for the next 5 years until they decide to clean the trunk of their squad out, right? With the online stuff, they have access to it all the time, which I think is a really cool feature to doing online learning. I'll never forget, I did a semester when I was going to Purdue, I did online. And it was so nice to be able to go back over and look at those slideshows. You know, there was a lot of instructors that they at Purdue, they just put the PowerPoint on the wall when you were there in person. You didn't have access to it after the class was over. So you better be taking a crap ton of notes and remembering all this stuff. And that's one of the things that I liked about the online learning, was I have that ability to keep going back over that information. So, yeah, I think it's really cool that it's all on.
Huh? Yeah. The other thing is that we realized quickly that 75% of the people or more that are training police dogs, you know, as well, have not been in law enforcement. So we That's ran true. Into that problem where they're teaching law enforcement officers how to do their thing. So we created all these chapters with people like you in the law enforcement end of the industry. Some of the big names in this industry have created this canine FTO with us, because we knew we had to bridge that gap, because after 9/11, stuff just started going way too fast.
Yep. Yeah, that's true.
It's been a long time, but it takes a long time to create the courses.
Mm-hmm.
there's big companies out there. They pump out 100 dogs, hundreds of dogs a month. And then after 9/11, it only got crazier. They went crazy. Well, some of these bigger companies, I'm sitting there going, their Pearson comes to me, I end up getting the contract, or they problem solving with me on issues that they're having on the street. And you're like, okay, so let's see your manual. And see that dead air? That's exactly what you get when you ask some of these canine handlers, well, let me see your canine handler manual from when you went to school. And I know that there's a major one out here, been around since the 60s. And I talk to get their contract, or I talk to them about some problem solving. You're like, let me see your canine handler manual. And it's like 9 pages. Like, are you kidding me? Like, what do you mean 9 pages? You're working a patrol dual purpose dog.
Right.
Or for the civilians, you know, that we run into, get phone calls daily looking for problem solving or assistance. And you're like, where'd you go to school? And they're like, oh, I went wherever, in Florida, and they're in Colorado or Texas or something. And you're like, where's your manual? You know, mm-hmm. Let's see your manual, because I need to know what you were trained on and what you need. Where do I bridge that gap? How do we bridge that gap? Because what we're talking about here is not the canine training. Anybody, when your dog left school, where I'm pretty much confident, I could say 99.999% confident that that dog was trained to do and know exactly what his job is. It's when you go day one, or as soon as you get home, like we talked about for other problem solving, that's where you start detraining or retraining new yep. things. And without the course curriculum that we offer, I mean, we're going to talk about in Canine FTO, we talk about the things that you didn't teach, you weren't taught in school, or that you need to continue your education on. Mm-hmm. Like you said, everything's evolving. Every day evolves. If you're taught in Alabama and you come to Texas, it's different. If you're trained in Texas and now you're in Virginia, West Virginia or Virginia or DC, that's going to be completely different.
Right. You know, and I do have a question for you. What is one of the biggest problem areas that you've seen with brand new handlers coming out of an academy? What's one of the biggest issues that you've really had to coach a lot of your people on?
Right. If you're going over the top, you know, if you're talking about the top 10 problems that always come up, you know, top five is going to be definitely one of the top five is always going to be vehicle patrol with the canine. So that's what we were talking about. Like, I'm pretty sure that 99% or around that category weren't deployed when they went to school out of a police cruiser. And now here we are through Canine FTO that we're able to have these guys sit in their cruiser and learn this stuff on the fly because of online. I mean, it's great with the technology that's out there today, but one of the top things is always going to be, well, it boils down to some kind of problem solving, and you're like, okay, what were you trained in for patrol canine, vehicle patrol canine? And they're like, most of the time it's nothing. Let's just say that. Mm-hmm. Like vehicle patrol canine. So you deployed out of a crate or a kennel. Yep. So when you went to school, you went through that 3 weeks, 4 weeks, or even at a 300 and something hour class. Most of the time at the canine facilities, you don't have a patrol car to deploy out of. And here you are day one, you're in a patrol car because you're in law enforcement, or even the private professional, same thing. That person probably doesn't even know what to have in his car. And that's one of the main major topics, you know, equipment right. for the car, having the dog at the ready. What does that mean? Mm-hmm. What's a radio ear mean? You know, there's tactics and maneuvering with your canine vehicle, even keeping the interior. How do you keep the interior, you know, cooler? Where are you supposed to park? Where are you supposed to deploy? Right. How are you supposed to drive now? Where are you supposed to keep your training aids? Where yep. do you keep your bite sleeve? Where do you keep your toys?
Yeah.
You, day one problem, you put your crap where you normally had it before you were in canine, right there in the front seat, or you put your little canine, your seat cover. That was your office, right? You had your office in the bag, the equipment bag. They yep. sell them all over. Our buddies sell them. And you put them right there on the front seat. Well, I guarantee you by the first 5 minutes of that shift and you weren't in the car, the dog ate the back of that off. And now your office is now spread all over your front seat. The dog can't get to it, maybe. Or did you leave your slider open? Does it? You just, are you even equipped with a slider?
Right.
Forget about the door pop issues that we talk about in the chapter. Mm-hmm. But you're talking about the slider issue. Have you even deployed your dog out of that slider? If you got into a situation in your front seat, your door pop, you might not be able to get to it, but you could push your slider open and the dog could deploy right out of the front seat. Police Network just showed a video of a suspect coming up to a law enforcement officer at the front seat and pulling him out of his own front seat and beating him up. Like, there's a lot of tactics wrong with that, but if you couldn't get to your door pop fails, are you able to push the slider up and let your dog out? But has he ever deployed that way? If you're watching those other canine competition things, some of those dogs can't go through a back door and out the front door.
Right.
So I mean, there's just stuff that just vehicle patrol section is one of the top five all the time. And that's why we put it in one of the 21 chapters.
Yeah.
Even for the supervisor, vehicle patrol with the canine is one of the chapters that they're going to get, because we only talked about one of the five issues and one of the top 10. I mean, there's are huge issues and people could have got the training already, but I guarantee that, you know, that's one of the things you didn't get taught in school. And day one, that's one of the first things that's going to be hitting you in the face. But it's not about driving around in the car. There's so many issues in that one chapter.
You know? Sure. Well, and I have your table of contents up here. There's 40 hours of online learning for the canine FTO course. And like, yeah, I even like how you start out, the history of canines and police work. And then you have canine policies and administrative maintenance, canine equipment and maintenance, understanding canine learning, obedience and handling of the canine, home kenneling and maintenance. I see actually a lot of posts on the law enforcement.
That's always course. One of the other top five. That's always one of the other top five is home kenneling, because they were at school.
Right.
And maybe you were in a hotel. Maybe you weren't. Maybe the dog stayed at the kennel and you just showed up. You were in a dorm room without your dog. So, I mean, dang, anybody that has a dog at their house, I don't care where you got it. It started right then, started day one.
Right.
Vehicle patrol. And home kenneling, more importantly, before that. That's why home kenneling's before the vehicle patrol. This is a learning domain. So, of course, we had to start with history of police working dogs, not military. There's nothing against that. But we're not talking about wars. We're talking about, you know, suburbia, urban, suburban stuff. We're talking about United States of America, police work, police dogs. So we went through the history on that. And then we went into policy and procedures, because we left that in there because that's where your agency's policy, it talks about what those are, but we don't write your policy. But that's where you have to understand that you better have one.
Right.
And there's a lot of companies that have popped up, and we even mentioned some of those companies on there that help you with the policy. But I can, 9 out of 10 private industry people out there right now, they're not operating on any canine policy. They don't have a policy. They don't even know what that means because they didn't go to school for that. They just learned how to be behind the leash.
Right. Which could create a lot of problems if they get subpoenaed into court.
Right. Well, more importantly, it's just not safe. You need to know what your operations are going to be in case something happens, because that something's about to happen on call one. Even at your house, something can happen. You need to be educated. And this wasn't created for canine trainers. There's canine trainer schools left and right. This is the one that the canine trainer takes to train law enforcement or canine handlers, period. Not just law enforcement, but canine in the private industry. Like we said, 9 out of 10 of them they haven't even been to school. And they're running explosive detection dogs out there, or dope dogs. They kind of backfilled for us when we were busy fighting terrorism or being on a terrorism task force or bridging gaps to other places. The civilian world exploded in private industry. And there's even private patrol teams out there, private canine bite teams, you know, patrol protection teams out there now. These people need to take a handler's course. Somebody has to bridge that gap.
Right, right. So I think that what Canine FTO offers is phenomenal information to have at the tips of your finger for any type of questions that you have after an academy, even if you're an experienced guy, supervisors. I agree with you. To go back to the comment you were making about supervisors, you're right. They've been through the police academy. They've been through their FTO program. Then they had to go through the FTO training program to be an FTO. So they know all that stuff like the back of their hand. Why aren't supervisors? I've talked to so many supervisors across the United States that are like, hey, they just put me in charge of the canine. I don't know crap about canines and deployments. And so then I started having a lot of the supervisors come into my kennel and I would teach them, hey, this is how we train them to work with the dog. So if you start having problems, you need to know that this was our policy. This is how we conducted the training. And you know, this is how you need to modify your canine policy for your department. Is this your first canine team? Where did you get your canine policies and procedures? Oh, well, we got them from a neighboring county. Okay, right. Well, what if your county is different though? What if you have a higher rate of lawsuits compared to that county and you guys need to modify some policies? You can't just adopt anybody. And so I think it's cool because the Canine FTO program makes supervisors and department heads think outside the box when it comes to their personal policies and procedures in deployment of a canine. So
operations, you know, operations. I mean, they may have a policy and procedures now, but operationally, they need to break that down. And who's going to do that? It needs to be the veteran at the agency. And if they don't have a veteran, then they need to take this class. The supervisor could take this class at 24 hours for the supervisor. Mm-hmm. And they take that. The thing with FTO, like you said, it's at will. It's you log in and you get a call. You could take this from your cruiser. So you're sitting in your patrol car, you log in to K9 FTO and you're sitting there and you get a call. You just shut it down and you go to your call. When you come back, it remembers where you were. There's test chapter quizzes. This is a real course curriculum education mark. So we had to create who could take the class, why they need to take the class. Is there a certificate of completion and who's backing the hours? You know, it's a 40-hour class or is it 24 hours? But a supervisor course in person that you had to fly to, spend money on travel expenses. Yeah. That is only one day, 8 to 16 hours. Mm-hmm. That's it. This is 24 hours of learning. You're going to read those chapters. And as a supervisor, you're going to take the tests that you need to take the tests on. And that's the completion. At the completion of your class, you get a 24 hours of canine knowledge right there at your fingertips forever. And so a lot of people are going to be able to take that and then bridge the gap themselves with their own agency. And that's what they need to do.
Right. So
it's worked out. There hasn't been anybody that take this class that wasn't already an operator, even such as yourself, that took this class again and go, dang, I never saw that in writing before. I remember hearing it before, but I never saw it in writing. And now that it's in writing and you're the psychologist on the learning, it needs to be in writing, you know? Somebody could tell you that day one, and here we are day, you know, week four at a 4-week class, you're not going to remember that.
Right.
So this is already in writing and it's online. Just flip open your computer and you need to review these, chapters, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So listen, if whether you're an independent canine contractor, a trainer, a canine supervisor, a experienced canine team, new canine team, this applies pretty much to anybody working with police canine or military canine. It doesn't matter. If you want to have loads of canine knowledge at the tips of your fingertips, like David was saying, you have some downtime in your cruiser, you can pull it up. Head on over to k9fto.com. If you want to sign up for it, we have a special code for you. It's COD2020. That's Charlie Oscar David 2020, COD 2020. When you check out, go ahead and put that code in there. There's a discount form if they use that code, correct?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
We were talking about putting a discount. It depends on what class they're taking, you know? I mean,
sure.
The dollar amounts change, but there's always a discount code. We want to use that code. Just punch in Canines on Duty or COD 2020, and we're going to know where you came from.
Yeah, yeah. So head on over to Canine FTO, check it out. David, thank you so much for joining us today on this podcast and filling everybody in on what Canine FTO is all about and the reasons why you've designed this. I think your heart's in the right place. And man, to have 18 years of law enforcement experience, you can tell that you love the job and you want to see departments succeed with their canine program. So to me, that's the most amazing thing about this is that you did this from a good place.
Right, definitely. And then we're going to have our class coming up from Canines on Duty, our canine psychology for the canine handler. I mean, that class, you know, there should be no, you know, nothing holding anyone back from taking that class when it gets up and running.
Yep. So. Absolutely. All right, David, thank you so much for joining us. And for all you listeners, thank you so much for tuning in here at Canines on Duty, well, specifically Canine Mind Freak, which is our podcast channel and now our video blog name for our video blogs. We just want to thank you for tuning in and for all your support. We could not be doing this if it wasn't for you people tuning in and liking our stuff and sharing and commenting and kind of helping guiding us to determine where people need the knowledge and the experience. So I want to give a shout out to you guys. So for now, stay safe, watch your six, and as always, Semper Fi.